And welcome back to Coast with Hillary Gamm. We're going to take your phone calls as we talk about her work, Billions Lost, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Hillary Gamm with us. Your phone calls, of course, as we talk about high technology. Hillary, what can people do to make this better?
Oh, thank you so much for asking that. Well, one of the things I'm hoping that we can do as a nation is, the first is just understand how many tech jobs have left the U.S. So what I'm thinking and what I suggested in the Roadmap to Change, last chapter of my book, Billions Lost, the American Tech Crisis and the Roadmap to Change, is that we, at least when companies are reporting their taxes, ask them to report how many foreign tech workers are employed by their company, either as a captive tech labor force that that company owns and operates in a foreign land, or as a outsourced offshore arrangement where they're hiring a large technology services company to supply their tech labor. You know, either way, we'll be able to get a real figure. Is it 5 million jobs? Is it 1 million jobs? Is it 3 million jobs? Is it 10 million jobs? And we'll be able to get, you know, some kind of figure of how many people have really lost the opportunity to work in the tech field here in the U.S. Secondly, one of the things that I'm advocating for is preparing our children to be able to be successful in the digital age. So in today's public education, we are not really teaching kids to code. We're teaching them how to manipulate a mobile device or a keyboard, but as you alluded to earlier, five-year-olds can typically do that better than most adults. So I think there needs to be a shift in the focus of how we're educating our children as a nation. We need to ensure that we're getting kids excited about the fundamentals of coding so that American citizens and American children can be educated and take those jobs in the U.S. to help our economy and to protect our national interests. So those are two big things that I'm hoping that we can do as a nation to make things better moving forward. The couple other things that I suggest have to do with visas and American workers. So in the past few years, there's been a big push to take away remote work from U.S. workers. And that's really affected a lot of the women who've worked in technology because it's, instead of making it really easy and flexible for them to continue to work in the tech field, they've all been asked to come back into the office, and that makes it a lot harder for them to be good wives, mothers, caregivers, and also stay employed in the tech field. So that would be one thing I'm hoping we can reverse the trend and get more folks in the ability to work remotely for American companies. And I'm also hoping, from a visa perspective, we are offering loads of visas, both from an education and a workforce perspective. H-1B visas that we award in the U.S., I think most Americans don't realize the H-1B visa is a multiplier. So for every one H-1B visa holder in the U.S. working in a tech job, they typically have a whole team of folks who work for them in another country. So it's really not one job we're losing with each one H-1B visa that we award. It's typically sometimes between 2 and 100 jobs that the U.S. economy is losing. So I'm hoping those kinds of changes could take place where we raise the awareness of the American people and we engage the leadership in the United States to bring those IT jobs back to the U.S., create an environment where we can educate our own children and hire people to work remotely within the confines of our country.
Plus, we got to get rid of corporate greed. They've got to make a decision. You know, we want jobs at home and we can still make profits.
You're 100%. And, you know, there's all kinds of places in the U.S. where the cost of living is really low. And there's some companies, one of the companies I mentioned in the book is a company that supplies labor to the government. And many of the government entities that specifically deal with classified information, only Americans that have the right classification clearance can be employed. And so they've created their own domestic outsourcing where they just go to a low-cost location in the U.S. and they hire Americans. And that's a paradigm I hope we can replicate across all the industries in the U.S. And somehow, you know, I'm not sure exactly what needs to be done, but like you said, let's get American companies hiring American. And that's what's so important to me. One of the things that most people realize when it comes to autos is that when automobiles are not manufactured in the U.S., we're losing real dollars, and we're losing the ability to advance automaking. So when we think about manufacturing coming back to the U.S., it's not just manufacturing jobs that are going to come back to the U.S., it's all those technology jobs that are going to come back to the U.S. as well. So when we think about robotics and artificial intelligence, the only way the United States can compete and continue to be a leader in those areas is if we bring back the manufacturing that artificial intelligence and robotics are supporting. So it's critical to bring this work back to the U.S. to help enable our current economic situation and really to make sure that in the future the United States is strong economically.
Okay, let's go to the calls here. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx to get things started. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, Joe. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Hillary. Now, China's been stepping up their game, and as far as the, and you mentioned the space race earlier, as far as setting up plans to do colonization on the moon, the U.S. can't afford to fall far behind in this respect. Do you think that it would be beneficial for the U.S. to initiate some kind of a joint venture with other countries in order to compete against China?
That's a great question. You know, I think people underestimate what's going on with China and the threat that they pose to the United States and the free world. You know, China is investing their government dollars to become the leaders militarily, technologically. And we have to remember that in China, they have a leader and a regime that has a long-term vision, right? They're not measuring their quarterly results. They're not looking at a four-year term. They're looking at 20, 30-year plans. And so they invest time, money, resources to get there. So, you know, I think that in America's history, we got a man on the moon by doing it ourselves. But I also think that the United States, you know, funds DARPA, right, and NASA. And even Elon Musk, right, is a great, you know, really being a great leader to try to get the U.S. to move ahead. And so I think there's a lot of investment opportunities within the U.S. and with some of our tech giants in combination with our U.S. government to really make sure that we are able to compete and win at that game. But I think that with our allies, there would be an opportunity. And I'd love to hear what you think, but do you think there would be an opportunity and America could really make it that much more successful in an endeavor if we partnered with the other allies that were looking to get the same results that the United States would want to gain? I think that probably would be good. But I do also think that within the United States, we have billions and billions of dollars. And again, I mean, I believe that even Amazon, Bezos, is a huge supporter of space travel. He's, I think, the richest man in the world.
He's getting there, if he isn't.
I think he's worth over $100 billion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Amazon would probably be, is a huge player in that space already and would probably be, you know, a great leader in terms of making sure that we're winning at that game.
Let's go to Bob in Cleveland, Ohio, first-time caller. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Yeah, George.
Hi there.
I just heard on the news tonight that our Pentagon generals just purchased a bunch of cell phones, I think from China.
Oh, boy.
Only to find out that everything they're saying on these new cell phones that they bought is going right back to China.
I believe it. I believe it. Unbelievable.
And can I ask the lady one other question?
Sure.
Real quick?
Absolutely.
Isn't there a lot of pollution in making all this electronic stuff? Because, you know, we've had people go over to China, and they, you know, to drive to our plants, they drive for hours because there's so much polluted areas.
Well, interesting. I love that you just told the story about what's going on in Washington. Thank you for that. That's awesome. And the first caller, thank you for your great question about NASA. And, you know, what's so interesting about that, you know, one of my high schoolers came home and told me that their teacher showed them a aerial satellite photograph when they were talking about the changes in environment. And I then saw some reports. Interestingly, the U.S. has reduced its carbon footprint to, I think, a fraction, 10% of what it was maybe 10 years ago. China produces much more carbon and pollution, just like you stated, I think more than 90% than the U.S., if I remember the statistics correctly. And they, China as a country, is expected not to have to reduce their carbon footprint until 2030. And I'm like, how is that possible? So why is it the U.S. has to meet a certain standard by 2018 and the Chinese get another 12 years to pollute our planet? I mean, it seems a little unfair to me, and I think you're right on the money when you say that China has a lot more pollution than the U.S.
Okay, let's go next to more callers. We go to Barbara in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, I just want to make a comment and ask two questions. I think with this new technological age, it's hard for people like me that don't understand it, like we encounter problems all the time, and we're not gifted in that kind of knowledge, and I lose my temper a lot, and I'm not proud of it, but it's just very frustrating. And then I want to know, what is U.S.-based when you call a company and talk to someone on the phone? What does that mean? And also, what is executive escalations? And I'll listen off the air.
Okay. I don't know if we can answer all of them, but do you want to take a jump at some of that, Hillary?
Of course.
All right.
First, Barbara, I want to assure you that you are not alone in your frustration working in technology. There's folks all over the U.S. and actually all over the world who struggle with technology. Interestingly, you know, our children and younger adults tend to be the ones who master the new technology and these changes first, and they're often educating their older peers and how to do things. So don't feel alone in your frustration when technology doesn't work right. I've been in this business for over 25 years, and I get frustrated too. So I don't want you to feel alone in that. You asked a little bit about call when you call in. I mean, many times the call centers are located outside the U.S., and an executive escalation, typically, I think, are you asking when you call a call center and you're not getting the response you need, are you then able to escalate it to someone higher up in the organization by sending a letter or asking for a manager? You know, I'm not exactly sure if that was your question, but that's a standard protocol that folks use when they need to make sure that they get a problem resolved.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's take a few more calls in a break. Then we're coming back with final phone calls with Hillary Gamm. By the way, Hillary, where do we get the book, Billions Lost?
Amazon. Amazon would be great. BillionsLostBook.com is the website, and the book's available on Amazon.
All right, back to the calls. Tom is in Washington, state of west of the Rockies. Thomas, go ahead.
You bet. Really exciting to get on. It always is.
Thank you, sir.
We need to figure out who's been suppressing Alex Jones all these years, because he's been talking this stuff. He's been talking about things just like this
for years,
for a long, long time. And George, you've done a good job of bringing people on just like Hillary here. But the main point I've got is National Semiconductor, before they got bled dry by the Chinese, okay, they suggested, based on the old Autobahn network, intrinsically safe chips that they could make here in America, and then that they were impenetrable from foreign influences, and the whole electorate could run on it. And, we'd be really secure with that. And then, somewhere along the line, you know, we would be firewalling out to different corporations and stuff in foreign countries. But, the outsourcing of people who are disreputable, literally. I mean, we're bleeding to death more than one way, and this is one of the ways we're bleeding to death.
There's no doubt about that. And this loss of blood could be enormous, Hillary.
Yeah, and it's not only just the technology labor, it's the ability to educate our Americans, and now it's investment. Did you know that 5 years ago, 95% of the investments for high tech were in Silicon Valley? Today, China has 40% of the investments associated.
And what about the Koreas?
Absolutely, that's right, and the Japanese.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all... How much money do these corporations save by doing what they've done, and that's to take these overseas?
Since the 1990s, it's trillions and trillions of dollars that have been lost to the U.S. economy, trillions.
Lost or they saved?
And it's the safety and security for U.S. citizens and our entities.
And their excuse is we have to preserve shareholder value and make as much money as we can and watch our bottom line, so we have to do what we have to do. How do you argue with that?
That's a good question. I argue by saying that if we don't have Americans who are able to master technology and manage the technology, we lose our competitive advantage and we basically lose our economy. In addition to that, if we don't have Americans who know how to secure our networks and secure our data, then our data can be easily hacked and our entire existence can be no more. So unless we take control and understand that the future is in technology and we must educate our own. One of the things I didn't talk about on the show tonight is about how our higher education system in the U.S. has become an export, how we are educating millions and millions of foreign children before we're educating our own American children, how American universities give scholarships to foreigners in greater numbers sometimes may give them to our own American children.
Well, and rather than build a wall between the United States and Mexico, what we should do is build some kind of economic wall to get these jobs and production back here.
From your mouth to you know whose ears. I'm hoping for that.
We should be. And is it easy or hard to do this?
I think it's something that we definitely can achieve, and we can turn the tide. What we need is more Americans understanding the magnitude of what's occurred.
Our special guest, of course, is Hillary Gamm, Billions Lost. How'd you get that name, by the way? There's got to be a story behind this name. There is, isn't there?
Okay, I'm going to give you this story. You know, I wanted people to feel good that there was someone who really cared about the United States, who was honest and wanted to represent the country and really help Americans, the future of America, with the name of Hillary. How does that suit you?
Okay, I get it.
Is that good?
Now, somebody who just tuned in is probably saying, why is Nori making fun of her name? This is highly unlike him. He doesn't do this. This is a pen name. It's not her real name. And so that's why I was curious how she got that name. Simple as that. And is this your first book?
This is, yep. This is the first book that I wrote. I felt compelled to write it. I was getting lots of calls from people who've worked with me and worked for me that needed references. And I realized that, you know, what was occurring maybe in my immediate area, my immediate industry and technology, was really occurring across the United States. Small businesses were being squeezed out of the technology outsourcing arena, and all the tech labor was going out. And sadly, you know, most workers in the IT industry, when they hit the age of 45, you know, they're the first ones to get laid off or early retired. So we have folks that have been working a career in technology, and all of a sudden they're obsolete. And that's the first time in the country's history that's happened, right? We've always had people in their 45, 50-year range, you know, 55, earning their highest incomes, getting ready to save for retirement. And the new paradigm is instead to replace these technology workers with people from other lands. So I was compelled to write the book to kind of set the record straight and make sure Americans understood what was going on, and also to level the playing field.
Well, it was a good job. Hillary, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Michael Brain joins us as we talk about his work. He's written a couple books with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, our dear friend, The Road to Strange, but he's got another one out that he wrote called Travel Tales. Looking forward to chatting with him about all of those. Hillary Gamm with us, our final segment, final calls as well. Hillary, in terms of high tech, the loss of jobs, has it affected any particular class of people in the United States the poor, the middle class, upper class, or everybody?
I think that the last chapter, the seventh chapter in the book, I talk a little bit about the middle class. I think when we send all our jobs, and the biggest growth industry you have in the nation, or the majority of them offshore, we're basically hollowing out the middle class because we're not giving them an opportunity to earn the wages and give them to grow, give them an opportunity to grow in terms of living in the U.S. and all the economic benefits they get from having dignity and work and all that good stuff. George, I was going to ask you, one of my ideas, I'm going to ask you what you thought, one of my ideas to help the nation and kind of get in front of our international competitors in the area of technology and also as a nation be able to deal well with our tech giants is to create a new cabinet position called the Secretary of Technology, kind of like a Secretary of Defense.
I like that. An expert in IT and everything else.
Exactly. You know, to negotiate with our huge tech companies domestically, but then also be somebody who's eloquent and a good negotiator. We have to deal with countries like China, Japan, Korea, Germany, Russia, right?
It's an amazing story that our Pentagon people got these phones and they were tapped. Jeez.
I know.
Who do you believe anymore, right?
It's incredible, isn't it? Every day there's a new story. And then, you know, there's the story about the chips that the Chinese manufactured that were going into the American missiles.
Right.
And they
same thing.
Fired. It's, you know, it's unbelievable. And, you know, I read so many different stories today to prepare for the interview that were all about, you know, military and all the pieces and components and subcontractors. It's so important we keep this work and this engineering here in the U.S. and that we educate our own kids to be able to get these jobs and stay employed and keep our own Americans employed.
Well, another thing, too, we need to avoid, and that is our power grid can get hacked, and some people are really concerned about it. I think the Russians are really trying to test if they can break in or not and shut us down.
They can break in anywhere. You know, the hacking that's gone on, you know, in terms of the things that have been hacked, right, it's like all these, you know, credit card companies, our own federal government HR organization was hacked. We have healthcare organizations that were hacked.
It's crazy.
It really is. You know, basically everything's hackable. I believe the estimate is we need about 130 million people working in cybersecurity. We have health data breaches. I think United Healthcare, there was a breach in 2017. I think Blue Cross Blue Shield, there was a breach. I think Bronx Lebanon Hospital, there was a breach, and that's health data. You know, in Australia, the health data has to be kept within the confines of the country. One of the critical key aspects I have in the book, not only do we need to return the tech jobs to the U.S., but we need to return the data. U.S. data needs to be stored stateside, because when our data is stored in another country, number one, it's not obliged to go by the rules and regulations of the U.S., and it's not protected, right? I mean, we're at the mercy of whatever country it's being housed in. It's not the same as having data stored here in the U.S. on U.S. soil. So we need to bring the jobs back. We need to bring the data back. And we need to protect against hacking and all the cyber crimes that are affecting U.S. entities, us as individuals, the government, and our corporations and our public universities.
Back to the calls. Michael's in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, George, and
sure.
Thank you, Hillary, for what you're doing. You started out talking about the Russian spyware. I forget the name of it. Can you say that name again?
Kaspersky.
Kaspersky. I remember when Barack Obama became president, it was a big issue made about the fact that he wanted to keep his BlackBerry phone and use that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Virginia Beach. I'm back and forth every day between Virginia Beach and Norfolk. And, of course, Norfolk is the city where the Walker spy family was finally caught. I'm just thinking, you know, if this spyware, we have thousands of people who have top security clearances, access to classified information. If spyware was on thousands of their smartphones, it would be easy to recruit perhaps hundreds or thousands of Walker's spy families. In other words, we would the enemy would know enough about them to know what their vulnerabilities are, and they might be able to arrange a first date exactly the way Melania had her first date with presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Your observations are always spot on, Michael. Always. Any comments, Hillary?
You know, it's sad to say, but, all the data that I caution people all the time, especially children, don't put any personal data on your pages. Don't tell people where you're located. Don't tell them what school you go to. Don't give them any information. Don't make any information public, because once it's out there, it's out there. Anyone can get a hold of it. And data that you put in all these different systems. You know, my biggest pet peeve in the college application process is the Common App. The Common App gets hacked. The data that's requested in the Common App includes how much money you make, how many siblings you have, people's names, social security numbers, addresses. I mean, it's unbelievable how extensive the data that is required to have these college kids apply to colleges through the Common App. That gets hacked. Man, there's a lot of families, a lot of U.S. citizens that are going to be in a lot of trouble.
Some friends of mine, their little 13-year-old was playing on their computer doing what he was doing, and they were in the other room, and all of a sudden they heard him on the telephone. And apparently what had happened was, while he was on his computer, their computer, up popped some kind of spam or something that said, please call this number for help into securing your computer better. And he called it. It was toll-free. And the guy on the other end was giving him instructions to get him into their computer. And they caught him just in time and hung up the phone. What an unbelievable scam.
The scams are amazing. You know, the phishing scam is when they send bogus emails that look like they're coming from someone you know.
Or a real company, your real credit card company or your bank. They look just like it.
And it's asking you for security information and personal details, and you have to make sure that you don't respond to those. Or when you get an email that has an attachment, don't ever open the attachment. It will open up a virus on your computer. You lose all your files. Or how about keylogging, where the criminals on the dark web will, map what you're putting in your keyboard to steal your passwords or get your personal info. Or how about the apps that the kids are using,
Snapchat,
where they want to use the camera and they want to use the microphone. Or how about Amazon's new Echo product that is in your home recording everything you say and tracking everything you say and then using that information potentially in their artificial intelligence systems?
I mean, are there people actually listening to all this stuff, or does it just go into some computer brain and there it is?
I don't work there. I don't know. I'm not part of that team. I don't know.
But you work someplace. I'll find out eventually.
I actually do. I am a full-time working mother, and I wrote this book in the wee hours of the night, just like I'm talking to you right now.
What's your real first name? Come on, we can't find you with just the real first name.
You are too much. It has been such a pleasure talking to you and being on your show this evening and giving me an opportunity to talk to the people in the United States and let them know that we need to bring our jobs and our data back, and we need to protect ourselves when it comes to technology and make the most of technology. You know, the advancements of technology are incredible. We're so much more productive as a society. We can get information at the snap of the fingers, but there's also a lot of things we need to worry about, we need to be careful about. So, again, I really appreciate that you let me come on.
Absolutely.
The talk about the
book. May end up with a bestseller by tomorrow morning, by the way.
Oh, I hope so. I would so appreciate that. That would be awesome. That's true. The more people that buy the book, I get the message that, people are endorsing the idea, right, and that they're behind me and they feel good about the fact that I'm really trying to set the record straight. So, yeah, it's tough. You know, I gave the book to one of my coworkers, and when he got the book, he was like, what's this? Oh, someone finally...
not knowing it was you, right?
Not knowing it was me at all, and couldn't believe. He's like, I was waiting so long to finally see someone talk about how all our jobs are going out of the U.S. Because, you know, we're all affected by it every day at work. You know, all the tech workers in the U.S. across the country are really feeling it. You know, we're working for people who aren't necessarily in the United States. We have people working for us who sometimes don't speak English, you know, perfectly, and it can be somewhat of a challenge and can be frustrating for our business partners. And, you know, we're faced with different struggles that we didn't have earlier in our careers here in the U.S., and it's challenging for us. And I think one of the things I talked about in the book is role modeling. If we lay off all our tech workers that are parents, then their children aren't going to want to get jobs in technology because they'll have seen their parents get laid off, they'll have seen their parents struggle to try to find a new profession, a new job, and they're not going to want to go into the technology field. So in order for us to protect our nation, we really need to keep Americans employed, American parents employed, and we need to make sure we have good role models.
That's
and
true.
Make sure that we have American professors teaching.
Out to Limestone, West Virginia we go. Buck is with us. Hi, Buck. How you feeling?
Hey, George. Well, I'm getting along, buddy.
Okay,
thank
my
you.
Friend. Stay strong.
Thank you. My question is for your guest. What about net neutrality? I think that personally is the biggest threat to me and my children and grandchildren than anything facing us today. I agree with what you say with respect to technology, but if this net neutrality thing comes about, then we'll just have the cable companies all over again, right?
Net neutrality, Hillary, what do you think?
That's a good question. You know, I'm on the fence because I've heard pros and cons both ways. So I don't want to sway you one way or another because I've heard pros and cons both ways of the net neutrality. But, you know, I think that, you know, we're a democracy and we're a capitalist country, and we need to make sure we provide for competition and that we have organizations and companies that are servicing us that are able to make money.
Yep.
And so I think that's what's foremost in my mind, to maintain the ability for competition.
Hillary's website, BillionsLostBook.com, BillionsLostBook.com. Are you going to do any television? And if you do, are you going to cover your face?
I am not doing any television.
You're not going to do it.
Unless you come interview me on television.
You never know. Yeah, but what happens if someone from Fox News or CNN wants to interview you for the book? How are you going to turn that down?
I don't know. I'll have to talk to you to get some guidance.
I'll give you guidance. And if you're going to be anonymous, we'll just have to put some kind of mask on you or something.
Yeah, get a Halloween mask. Sounds good, George. You're such a pleasure to speak to you tonight, sir. I can't thank you so much for what you're doing for the nation and broadcasting every night and giving people
success. Well, you know what? You folks are the ones that do all the work. I mean, you're the one who did this investigating. What we are is the vehicle to allow you to tell the world what's going on, and that we're very happy about.
And I'm very happy about it, and so are all your listeners. Thank you so much, sir, and thanks to your staff for bringing me on and giving the opportunity to talk to people tonight about technology and the threats for the U.S.
Charlie in El Paso, Texas. Squeeze you in real fast, Charlie. Go ahead.
Oh, about 12 years ago, I was getting in a final exam in Spanish, I had two brothers, one of them copied part of the final exam, and when the second one came in, I couldn't figure out why he finished 10 minutes ahead of the class. Well, it turned out that he copied, but I didn't know it, and I figured out after the exam why he did the exam in such a fast way. And so after that, I reconfigured the classroom and how the desks were arranged. And after that, I didn't have any problems with people taking out their phones and taking pictures or giving the answers to from first period to third period.
Well, you said technology is everywhere and anything could happen. Hillary, we're out of time. Thank you for being on the program. Good luck with the book, Billions Lost.
Thank you, sir. Be well.
And we are going to come back in just a moment with Michael Brain. His latest book is called Travel Tales, Women Alone. It's an amazing story, but he's also written a couple books with our dear friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley, The Road to Strange. We'll talk with him about that as well right here on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial. We will be right back.